Hello everybody, my name's Simon, I'm an addict.
Hi Simon.
It's nice to be here. Thanks for asking me, and thanks to everybody who's done service here today and everybody else for being here and making the meeting possible. One thing I've learned the hard way is that I can't do this on my own, and I need all the help I can get to combat this disease of addiction, because it's quite a strong and powerful thing. It's strong and powerful enough to put me in a box. It's strong enough to kill me. And a lot of things have happened in my life and through addiction, and I've not got time to go into detail about every single thing that's happened to me tonight in 15 minutes. That's pretty impossible, but it's good to be here. It's good to be alive, and it's good to be clean. And the last time I came here and done the chair, I was 5 months clean, and that was 3 years ago. And there was a convention on at Blackpool at the same time, that same night, and the meeting was quite quiet that night. There was about 50 handied in the meeting, which is quite quiet for this meeting. This is a big meeting, one of the biggest meetings in Britain on a Friday night. And I was really excited about hearing myself on a CD. I was really excited about it. So I done the share, and then the next week I come back and asked if my CD was there, and it wasn't there. And then the next week I done the same and it wasn't there. And then the next week there was one there with Simon on it. And I thought, yes, and I put it in my jacket. And I went for a coffee after the meeting. And it was in my head, and I'm sitting talking to people having a coffee after the meeting. I couldn't really concentrate on what they were saying. Really excited, thinking about this CD in my pocket to go back and listen to it. So I went back home. I live in Clapham Junction. Got back home into my flat, put it in the CD player, and it's all about me. And no, isn't it? It was Simon from Manchester. I was like, what? Oh, but I still listened to it, and it did help me that night. I had to force myself to listen to it, because I weighed it. I was thinking, oh, no. Do you know what I mean? But there you go. I started using drugs when I was 15, and solvent abuse and alcohol. Basically, it was anything that says harmful in the tin today with solvents, and I was attracted to that. My addict went straight for it. If I couldn't get glue, I would sniff Hammerite paint thinners, petrol, deodorant, nail varnish, fly spray. Seriously, I've even tried to sniff fly spray. It's got a handful in the tin. Ant killer. I was trying to snort that, no, didn't I? Wasp killer. I was drinking cans of lager at 15 and mixing it with the solvents, and started smoking a bit of puff when I was 15. I can remember when I couldn't even build a joint. I was like, try to build that for this and that, do you know what I mean? And slowly but surely I started to learn how to build joints, and then people was taking acid and that, do you know what I mean? The people who I was smoking hash with, and they were getting acid and speed, and I tried all that, and it was brilliant. Experimenting with all these drugs and feeling all these ways for the first time, I loved it. Every kind of drug, one of the first things I snorted was Ponstan period pills. It was in my friend's mum was away on holiday, right? And it was just the big thing about snorting drugs. I'd never snorted. It was these capsules in the medicine cabinet. I thought, oh, we'll snort these and empty them out. But didn't know what they were at the time. We got lines out and we're snorting these things. My eyes went like that. And they were pure black, do you know what I mean, underneath. Walking about, I said, what happened to you? He says, well, we snorted these tablets. We didn't know what they were. And I told someone, say, they're bloody period pills. Do you know what I mean? So it was just like, it was like exciting, do you know what I mean? Just the thing about snorting something. And then, eventually, and it says, may cause drowsiness. Please avoid using machinery, avoid alcohol. Temazepam, we called them jellies in Scotland, and diazepam, the Valium. Then we had a few beers, man, and I'd be fighting everybody. And I spent a lot of years in dysentery taking them. I got first arrested when I was 15. I'd been arrested for kind of petty stuff and all that beforehand, the children's panel, they call it in Scotland, and all that. And I was arrested for 15 for robbery, do you know what I mean? And then I went to court, and in 16 you're classified as an adult in Scotland, no 18. And I went to court, and I was 16 for it for an offence I committed, and I was 15, and I ended up getting sent to prison. And that became a regular pattern of behaviour for me, that I didn't know that this at the time, but I was powerless. Do you know what I mean? I was not wanting about thinking I'm powerless and that. Do you know what I mean? I didn't have a clue about what powerless meant. Yeah, I didn't have a clue what powerless meant until I really smashed myself to bits and I come back to Narcotics Anonymous. And I really, truly believe you really need to be smashed to bits to for this to work for you. To take on, for me, somebody who was atheist, agnostic, to take on the concept of a power greater than myself working in my life, a higher power. And I found that here in Narcotics Anonymous. I found a power greater than my willpower. I don't know what my higher power is, do you know what I mean? So if anybody wants to come and ask me after the meeting, I'm sorry, I don't know what it is. But what I do know is it's something to do with coming to Narcotics Anonymous. And it's something to do with the 12 steps as well. And it's something to do with doing service and reading my literature and helping other addicts, talking to newcomers. And when I do all this stuff, I don't pick up a drink and a drug a day at a time. That's been my experience. And thousands of people all over the world have got the same experience as me for doing what I've done. I continue to do it. I got a commitment my first week back for a relapse. I was 27 months clean and sober. And I had reservations in my programme that one day I'd be able to try control drinking and maybe just smoking a bit of weed. Do you know what I mean? So I tried that, and I really, really believed that I could do that, because I'd been to detox, I'd been to rehab, I've been to meetings, I've got this awareness. I know what I'm not going to do now. Do you know what I mean? And it's a cunning disease. It's baffling. I've heard government scientists doing chairs got baffled for this disease. It's nothing to do with intellect. If you can't read or write, you can still do the steps. If you're dyslexic, you can still do the steps. My first kind of getting into class A drugs, I was 20 the first time I tried cocaine, it was in prison. I was 21 the first time I tried heroin. And all the other kind of opiate based painkillers as well, dehydrocodone and 10 G's, and I love that kind of warm, ready breath, kind of glow feeling it gave me, and I'd be scratching and that, and I get quite speedy off it and all that as well. The kind of disease that I suffer from, doesn't know the difference between a class A drug, a class B drug, or a class 3 C drug. Doesn't know the difference. Doesn't know the difference if it's a can of lager, or a bottle of cider, or a bottle of vodka, or a glass of whiskey, or whatever, or wine. It doesn't know the difference. What it does know is it does something to me that kind of gets me all obsessive, do you know what I mean? And I need another one. The concept of just having one bit of gear or anything like that, I never thought of that. I'll just have one. I never ever thought like that, because I wanted to go out my nut. I was always thinking about loads of drugs in my head, using loads of drugs. I was talking to somebody yesterday and they were talking about having a using dream and that, do you know what I mean? And they asked me about if I did, says, when I have a using dream, I try and use as much as I can before I wake up. You know what I mean? I'm going. That's terrible, isn't it?
Well, they did that bit out.
Yeah. And but what I found in these rooms was a kind of a peace, an atmosphere, a dynamic in the meetings in Narcotics Anonymous, which is different from my flat when I came here. It's different from when I was on the train coming here. There's something special in these meetings, the atmosphere, the dynamic, which I can't explain. But when I was smashed to bits after my failed controlled drinking and using, I came to these meetings, and there was people in these meetings and they helped me. Good, kind people. And I heard people talking in these meetings, and I had a bit of hope, and I had identification. And I believed these people had been where I'd been, and they could help me to get better, to get well. And I hate being told what to do. I hate it, do you know what I mean? So that kind of approach to sponsorship doesn't work with me. My sponsors don't tell me to do anything, do you know what I mean? And very non-judgmental, I need that kind of approach. We're all different, we all find our own depth in Narcotics Anonymous as well, do you know what I mean? There's many different ways to work the programme as there is individuals in it. And I've got my way of working and it works for me. And I feel pretty happy today in my life. And I've got my family back in my life today. It says in a book, great book, Narcotics Anonymous, really good read, helped me a lot, still helps me today. And it says in our book, it talks about relapse being the challenge, the experience that sparks a more rigorous application of the program. And that's what happened to me. The first time I came to meetings, the first time I was around that, I didn't believe in a higher power or anything like that. I thought, they're talking about higher power and that. And some people, maybe if they were in their mid-50s or something, and they were a hippie in the 60s or 70s, and they were a bit older, they wore a few beads and they wore sandals and maybe a pair of mad shorts and that. I think, oh, he sounds a bit spiritual. But anybody who maybe had scars on their faces, they'd spent a lot of time in prison, they'd done this and they'd done that, I think, bollocks, man, do you know what I mean? I used to pick and choose who I thought was spiritual. Do you know what I mean? But I've learned the hard way, do you know what I mean? It's a lot easier being clean than it is using. That's been my experience as well. It was really difficult trying to keep a habit going. It's a lot easier living this way of life. And the people who I hurt the most in my life were my family. It says in our book, it says, but most of all we harmed ourselves. Right. But I've got a chance to repair the damage that I've done to myself through the 12 steps. My mum and dad don't work the 12 steps or anything like that. But when they ask me what I'm doing, if they say, what are you doing tonight, Sam? I say, I'm going to a meeting tonight, Mum. I'm going to a meeting tonight, Dad, or my daughter, and or my sisters, or my gran, or close friends and that. They don't worry about me. Now, my mum and dad don't worry about me. They're not worried about the police coming to the chap at the door and say, oh, Simon's done this, Simon's done that. I spent more time in prison than I did in the streets using. Every single time that I was arrested, it was due to my addiction, being powerless over drinking drugs. Since I've been clean and sober, I've never been arrested. It's no rocket science. It isn't it? Do you know what I mean? But I need to do my part. I need to put in the action. I would much rather if I could just come to meetings and get the benefits of the programme without actually having to do anything. That would suit me fine. But that doesn't work for me, doesn't it? I need to get up off my arse and I need to put in the action. I've got a sponsor who I meet very regularly and I talk to, and I trust him. I can tell him anything. Somebody who didn't trust myself. I had to learn to trust myself before I could trust anybody else. And then it's been the 12 steps has been a healing process. I've got a much higher level of self-awareness now due to working the 12 steps. I've always done service since my first week of recovery. I've not always done things right. I've made mistakes, that's okay. And sometimes I've made the same mistake again. I don't always learn my mistakes straight away. And I do service. And I try and read my literature as much as I can. And I try and help other addicts. And one of the great things that I do today in my life is going to Wandsworth Prison. And I take a meeting in there. And it's fantastic. It's a great meeting. It's one of the best meetings I go to. The guys in there, the stuff they've been through a lot of stuff, similar to myself, but you don't have to have been to prison to take a meeting in the jail or do a chair in the jail. It's brilliant. It's one of the best things I've ever done in my life. And it's fantastic to go in there and do my part to carry the message. And it says in the Just for Today book this morning, it was a great reading this morning. It says we only keep what we have by giving it away. And it's a gift. Recovery is a gift. And I've done various service positions in the helpline and secretaries and treasury, and got myself involved to making tea and putting jails away and picking up dog ends outside meetings. Not for a bit of ask for a pipe, right enough, do you know what I mean? To help the meeting. And I was talking to somebody today, right? And the obsession in my head, and I was thinking about it. I can remember the first time that I injected heroin. Somebody else done it for me. I didn't know how to fix myself. And it was in East London. And the guy who I was with, it was another guy from Glasgow. And I says, oh, how are you doing in that? He just got out of day in 5 years, right? He was on the 5-year tariff. They got out after that. And for robberies, I'm done for 3 strikes and you're out. And I've clipped it on. I've already got 2 robberies. If I was got another one, I've been in that situation waiting to get a life sentence. The 3 strikes and you're out. And I was lucky I got off it. But anyway, we're running about East London and we're sticking knives up to people's throats and robbing them for their money to get buy heroin. Got back to the flat, there's no foil there, and I think, oh, I says, fuck it, do you know what I mean? And I'm standing there and I'm thinking, what happens if this kills me? I'd never inject one. I was standing there thinking, what, I don't want to die. So what happens is, I says, just do it, do you know what I mean? And I done it. I wanted the buzz, do you know what I mean? And I've got a phobia of needles. If you says to me, right, put a big bird-eating spider in your hand or a big carry tarantula, well, chase yourself. No way would I do it. But if there's a needle full of heroin in it, right, that obsession in my head for the buzz out the drugs overrides my phobia of needles. And I treat my disease with respect and I need to be doing all this stuff. All the stuff it's suggested, I kind of do it today because I don't want to pick up the first one. And if I keep on doing what I'm doing just now, I've got a defence. I've got some help, and that's why I keep coming to Narcotics Anonymous. The best thing I've ever done in my whole life is become a member of Narcotics Anonymous. If there's anybody new here, stick with this. It's a great thing. And thanks.